BJ, it's been such a remarkable career for you, making great music for well over 50 years now. And I want to go back to the start of your career. You've been making music and recording for some time, but in the midst of the Beatles and the Birds and the Rolling Stones, you hit it big with your first huge hit. And how unusual was it for 1966 for an old Hank Williams song to not only make the charts, but be a million seller?
It was unusual. I'd just been singing with our band, the Triumphs, that we had formed in the late 50s. And, I loved Hank Williams. I saw Hank Williams when I was about eight, 9 years old. Saw him perform. My dad was a huge fan of Hank's. There was a movie that was out back when I was young called Your Cheating Heart. It was the life story of Hank Williams.
Oh, with George Hamilton, right?
Yes, with George Hamilton the fourth, and not George Hamilton the fourth. That was but George Hamilton and Hank Jr. did the vocals for the movie. And it was me and a band member were at the theater, and he just told me, he said, man, that I'm So Lonesome thing, we ought to start doing that with the band. And so we did. We started doing it with the band, and it kind of evolved into the version that we did, which was, very different in some parts than the original, of course. And, I put it on the B side of what we thought was a hit record after we recorded our first album. I just put it on the B side, basically for my dad. And of course the A side was not a hit record. and I knew all the disc jockeys, very well. And we were all friends, and they supported us with airplay when they could. And disc jockey by the name of Bob White said, while you're here, let's listen to the other side. They turned it over. And it was Lonesome, and he loved it and put it on the radio, and it went number one in 3 weeks in Houston, Texas. And I got booked out with Dick Clark, and now I'm talking to you.
Well, it kind of set the tone for a remarkable career where you've succeeded in so many areas with country music, with pop, gospel, Christian music. And I guess that's because a good song is a good song, regardless of any label that might be applied to it.
Well, I think you're exactly right. It also kind of relates to when we started with our band. It was right at the inception of Top 40 radio. And we would, we put up our playlist, and what we were going to do, we just played dances for kids people of our age at that time out in the boondocks, and that we would just make our playlist up of what they played on the Top 40 radio. And of course that included all the genres, from Mantovani to Elvis Presley and Chubby Checker and Chuck Berry and all Little Richard, all those guys. And so we just made our playlist up of that. And I think that's what I never tried to really do different genres, but it just kind of worked out that way. It relates to what you said. A good song is a good song. And of course the gospel music came from a different experience that we had back then. And we got 5 Grammys for our gospel music, and that was pretty cool.
Well, went on to have another huge year in 1968, Eyes of a New York Woman, one of my all-time favorites. And then, when you talk about the great songs in the history of pop music that just sound as fresh today as they did 50 years ago, Hooked on a Feeling, certainly one of those.
Yeah, well, thank you. Hooked is, it would probably be right up with Lonesome, would be my favorite song that I've ever recorded, and I love Hooked. And I know most people come to hear me sing Raindrops, but the most of the time the biggest reaction to the anything we do is to Hooked on a Feeling. And that was a Reggie Young on the electric sitar with the American Studio Group, produced by Chip Smallman. That's when I moved up to Memphis, Tennessee in 67, and we started working at the American Studio and just trying to feeling ourselves out there. And the first kind of successful thing we had was the Eyes of a New York Woman. and then we had used the sitar on New York Woman a little bit, and so we've used it in a major way on Hooked on a Feeling, and, you know, it was a big hit for me.
Well, and then even with the big hits you've had, nothing could prepare you for the success, I'm sure, of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Now, is the story I've heard true that one of the reasons they reached out to you is because they thought your voice is what Paul Newman would have sounded like if he could sing?
Well, I think that had something to do with it. And because my childhood buddy back in those days, a guy by the name of Steve Tyrell, was a promotion man, an A&R guy for Scepter Records at that time, and he helped a lot with getting Mr. Bacharach to give me that shot. But I think that's right. I think they thought that would relate to Paul Newman, and even working more so in that direction, I had laryngitis when I did the song for the film. I had been doing a whole string of one-nighters over about a three-week period in the Midwest, and by the time I got out to California, my throat was just shot. I went to the doctor, and he said, you know, BJ, you've got the worst, you know, laryngitis, you know, I've ever said, worst throat I've ever seen. I said, I don't want you to even speak for 2 weeks. And I said, oh, doc, you know, you got to help me. So somehow he gave me a little medicine, B12, things like that. And, you know, I was able to get through the song a few times, but it was very scratchy. And I think that even worked in my favor. So, and the song, of course, was beautifully received and, you know, one of the first of its kind, really. Won the Academy Award for Mr. Bacharach, and also Mr. Bacharach won for the score. So it was a great, you know, Butch Cassidy was a great movie, you know, one of the all-time great Westerns. And it was just, you know, the whole thing was just such a pleasure to be involved with, and an honor, really.
We're talking to B.J. Thomas here on Downtown. I want to talk, speaking of Steve Tyrell, about maybe my favorite B.J. Thomas recording, and that's the effort you and Steve put together with the great Barry Mann, Cynthia Weil song, Rock and Roll Lullaby, which on its own was pretty amazing. But you and Steve came up with the idea of honoring some of the great sounds from the past, and that led you to track down people like Darlene Love, Duane Eddy, Dave Somerville, yeah, from the Diamonds, and just a remarkable record.
And Barry Mann played the keyboards, and it was a beautifully conceived production, mainly credit that to Steve and Al Gargoni, the two guys that produced the album Billy Joe Thomas, and it was just worked beautifully. You know, it was a million seller in South America and was going to be, you know, it was a top 15 record here in America. But what happened was, as soon as we finished that album and released Rock and Roll Lullaby, the company went bankrupt. So Scepter Records was a great, you know, one of the great independents, and they had some of the major, you know, Dionne Warwick and the Isley Brothers and a lot of great people, but they had financial problems. And at the end of that album, they weren't even able to press records. So a lot of that music kind of went by the boards, but the Rock and Roll Lullaby kind of stands out from that session. Beautifully done, and Darlene Love and the Blossoms and the Chiffons sang back up, and just a, you know, great production.
Mid-70s, you moved over to ABC and had one of the biggest hits of your career. Hey, Won't You Play Another Somebody Done, Somebody Wrong song, went to number one on both the pop and the country charts. And again, the country audience learned that you'd been making songs that were terrific songs that should have been played on country radio for years.
Yeah, you know, that's true. That's when I kind of started getting some country airplay for the first time. And the country, I think, has traditionally rejected people that are too, you know, pop people, even though, you know, Tom Jones and James Taylor have had some success country. But at that time, if you even had the sniff of pop, it was difficult to get airplay country. But Somebody Done Somebody Wrong song got me kind of in their mindset. And I've had a great experience with country music. I always felt like if I sang the right song, country people would think I was country, and the pop people would think I was pop. And I don't think pop people looked at somebody done somebody wrong song any differently than any of my songs, but I think country people did. So I was glad it broke me through there.
When you had big success in the 80s, Whatever Happened to Old Fashioned Love, New Looks from an Old Lover, Two Car Garage, one of my favorites, I think you did on MCA, Everybody Loves a Rain Song.
Yeah, Everybody Loves a Rain Song. It was written by Mark James, the guy that wrote Hooked on a Feeling, and The Eyes of a New York Woman for me. It was it wasn't very successful, but I think there was, it kind of came during the gospel period and the country awakening to my stuff, and that sometimes we did the gospel record, and the gospel records were so big, they were all platinum albums, and they were so big that people began to get the perception that, you know, that I was a gospel singer, and I was a minister, and things like that. So country and pop radio kind of had an idea that what I was doing then was gospel, and I kind of lost some of the attention that I'd always had in that area. But Rain Song, I always expected it to be a big record. It wasn't really big, but I still think it was I loved Mark James' material, and, you know, he's one of my best friends, and he's written a lot of songs for me, so I was happy to do it.
You had so much success with the gospel, with Christian music, a winner of several Dove Awards. How important has your faith been to you through these many years?
Well, I do have a faith, because Gloria and I and we live by a certain faith, but we're not religious by any stretch of the imagination. That we had what people have always considered a religious awakening, but we've had a wonderful spiritual life, and our spiritual beliefs have enabled us and strengthened us and helped us through the years in our way.
I would say too, of all the great success you've had in the entertainment business, I don't know that anything could compare with the fact that you and Gloria recently celebrated, I believe, your 49th anniversary.
Yeah, we got 50 years next year. We're excited about that, and Gloria has been, I never would have ever been able to, survive without Gloria. And she always could see me for who I was and not exactly who I was being and who I thought I was. I had my problems with alcohol and drugs, and she always could see the end of, the light at the end of the tunnel. And she helped me really see the world and see life for what it really was. So, we've had that's been the most important thing, of course, in my life. And we've had a beautiful, wonderful marriage, and we can't wait for next year. But 49 is good enough.
We're talking with BJ Thomas here on Downtown, still recording, still touring, still making great music. I love the album you did with the great producer Kyle Lenning and some wonderfully talented collaborators, the Living Room Sessions, revisiting some of your biggest hits, but finding a way to make them all new again.
Well, we took a kind of more relaxed thing to it. We were resistant to and Kyle Lenning, great producer, great guy, and he did a wonderful job. And we kind of resisted the idea to recut the records again, but the acoustic angle kind of worked with us, and so we did it basically electric free, and it was a lot of fun to do. But we had future projects with that particular situation in mind when we did that, and we kind of did that as a way to say, hey, we're still here. And but we, the follow-up record, it did not materialize, but I am hopefully going to have that record ready by the fall, and we've got a good project in mind. We've got some great songs, and so I hope to get that done by then.
And your voice sounds as good as ever, maybe even better. I was watching, I think it was the clip from the Grammy Hall of Fame with you and Steve Terrell, and man, your voice sounds good.
Oh, man, thank you. Thank you. Well, you know, it takes a little work. I got to, you know, I have to, you know, treat myself right and get rest and whatever. Because, you know, when you're traveling on the road, there never seems to be an opportunity to get any sleep. So I've got to stay as healthy as I can. I've been very lucky there. I've got good genes and, you know, I've been lucky.
Well, your music, part of the memories for a couple of generations of people now, and new ones being added all the time. BJ, thank you so much for more than 50 years of wonderful music and for making time for us.
Well, hey, brother, I appreciate it. And thank you for, you know, playing my music and being interested in me over all these years. And, I appreciate my fans out there. And thank you for helping me do what I do. And hopefully I'll talk to you again soon.